This is Michael Gonneau with Insight to Israel, brought to you by America's Web Radio. And I want to thank all of the guys at America's Web Radio for bringing the truth to the grassroots of the United States of America. The patriot conservatives, the Christians, those who believe in the Constitution, who believe in Judeo-Christian values, who stand firm with the Jewish state. Thank you guys for all your hard work. You sacrifice a lot to bring this show to Americans. I want to also say thank you to the those in the United States who contribute to Hershey's for Heroes. I just handed out 200 chocolate bars. Yoram Edinger, former ambassador, who's sitting here with me, 200 chocolate bars, sir, at a Gabbati graduation at the Kotel.
Wow.
Powerful, powerful. We even got family involved. There was a joy in handing those. It's for those of you who wonder, what is Hershey's for Heroes? It is where Americans are sending Hershey's chocolate bars, which are not sold here in Israel, with a note on each one saying thank you to the soldiers. We love you. We pray for you. Thank you for defending the Jewish state. The impact on the morale of a soldier that it has.
And their families.
Sir, there were families there, and they're like hugging me, like, thank you for this simple thing. And I even gave mom, dad, brother, sister, Hershey's chocolate bar, you know. And it was an amazing time. In fact, it was the most amazing experience. I need to get to more of these. I just don't have a list of or dates of when they happened. But I remember I had two friends of mine that were helping me out with pictures and handing out chocolate bars. And I remember during the graduation, the commander asking them, and I'm actually putting this in a YouTube video now with the words, with the subtitles in English, you know, asking, will you defend the country? Will you do this? Will you do that? And they say, yes, we will. Yes, we will. And then at the end, when he's done asking questions, it's like a square, like in a square, and there's a group on each end, like a boxing ring almost. I'm trying to create a mental picture. And there's a group of soldiers on each corner. And then one group starts out, in Hebrew, it's beautiful, we will defend, we will defend, we will defend. The next group says the same thing, the next group and the next group. It echoes off the walls of the Kotel. And you can hear me saying in the video, the Muslims are trembling at God's army on the other side of that wall on the Temple Mount,
wow.
On the where the Al-Aqsa Mosque is. It was so powerful, I started to cry. I said, God, defend these soldiers, keep them. Keep them. May their aim be sure and their strength. Anyway, you get what I'm saying. It was a very moving moment for me as an American who believes in the might of the military for principle's sake. When you have your core values intact and you have your military for a reason to fight wickedness and evil. Anyway, that was my experience, and it was fantastic. I love this military. Another beautiful day in the Jewish state here in Jerusalem, and I'm here in the Crown Plaza Hotel having a coffee and a tea with former Ambassador Yoram Edinger. Sir, it's good to have you here again.
Thank you.
Last time, folks loved the last show that you did with us. They also love the background noise. I've got people emailing me asking me to do video because they want to see what goes on around us. Anyway, thank you for all that you do for this country. Even in your state of quote-unquote what some would call retirement, you continue to work on and be a voice on behalf of the Jewish state, and I want to thank you for that. And thank you for being here.
Thank you very much.
Let's talk about what have you been up to since the last time you were on the show a month ago? Because you're going to be a monthly guest. So what have you been up to? Let's take a few minutes. What have you been up to besides taking care of the wife? And
well, my routine is literally 24/7 at the service of the cause of the Jewish state. And the cause for me means to educate Israeli and American movers and shakers from politics, media, academia, military, security, and business sectors on critical issues having to do with mutual threats to both U.S. and Israel, joint interest of both U.S. and Israel, and most recently a focus on what does a Jewish state mean for very vital American interests.
Right. Wow.
And in fact, when you enhance, optimism among Israeli soldiers, you basically enhance the performance of the beachhead, of America in the Middle East, and the beachhead which Israel serves in the Middle East is not only a beachhead of values, Judeo-Christian values,
right,
but it's an operational beachhead. And give you one example, going back to 1970. In 1970, pro-Soviet Syria invaded pro-U.S. Jordan. Jordan has never been a match for Syrian military might. 1970, the U.S. could not protect Jordan because it was bogged down in Vietnam, Laos, and Cambodia.
Wow.
The American president called the Israeli prime minister, then Golda Meir.
Great lady. And,
great lady. Iron lady.
Yes.
Iron lady. And he laid out the essence of the mutual threat to American and Israeli interest. And within 24 hours, Israel mobilized its regular and reserve forces to the joint Israeli-Syrian-Jordanian frontier. And the following day, the Israeli invasion, the Syrian invasion of Jordan, was rolled back without firing a single shot.
Wow.
Israel's posture of deterrence did the trick. Without Israeli involvement, the Hashemite regime would be toast, and that would would have dealt a blow to American interests, because the aim was to take advantage of the toppling of the pro-American regime in Jordan to surge into Saudi Arabia and take over the pro-American Arab oil-producing regimes, which would have devastated American economy and American national security interest, all of which was prevented by an Israeli military declaration of intent, without, again, firing a single shot, without requiring a single American boot on the ground. There's no other country in the world which either can or is willing to perform such a service,
right,
for America's interest. The Jewish state is the only such country anywhere in the world. Today, the Hashemite regime in Jordan is much more vulnerable than any time before due to the events on the Arab street, particularly Syria. The Syrian lava does not stay only within Syria. It threatens to sweep into Jordan, into Iraq, into Kuwait, into Saudi Arabia. And once again, it is Israel, which is the life insurance policy of the pro-American Hashemite regime in Jordan. America feels much more confident with a strong Israel in the Middle East because its Arab allies feel much confident with a robust Jewish state in the Middle East.
I couldn't have said that any better. That was great stuff. You know, sir, you know, that's exactly what we're going to talk about today, because before we came on the air, we want to talk about Israel's overwhelming ability to find herself independent from those who were once her ally, but politically, not words, because words don't mean a thing. I don't care how much a woman says she loves me. If she's out flirting with other guys, actually prostituting herself out to other guys, she can come back home and say she loves me all she wants. But I know that's a lie, and actions speak louder than words.
It's walking the walk and not talking the talk, which counts.
Absolutely, and I'm going to tell you what I see. You're a much smarter man than I am. But as a news junkie, and having some friends in D.C. that work in politics, you're much more deeper than I am. But the United States, the powers that be, are whoring themselves out, prostituting themselves out to Muslim countries, increasing funding, arming, as you said, the Syrian rebels, which want to kill the Jewish people, which want to kill Americans. We are whoring ourselves out to an ideology cloaked in religion, which is Islam, and we are going to end up the losers in the end. Now, I say that from two perspectives. Number one, I say that from the perspective that we are broke, and the Chinese owns most of our debt, and we continue to print money. And once there's more money on the market, then it devaluates the dollar. And also, I'm coming from a biblical, spiritual perspective. God will not tolerate us funding the enemy and going against his people, his land that's handpicked, that's been built on brains, bronze, and Jewish blood. Sometimes I get off my own little spat, but with that being said, I want us to talk about Israel's full capability of being a singular entity and not having, I don't believe this country needs to depend on anyone else. You need your allies, everybody does, you know, you need your friends. But as far as when I hear a lot of Israelis say that, you know, we need American money, you know, we don't want America to fail, I say no. You never had America in Libya when you went after Muammar Gaddafi. You never had America in Iraq when you went after Saddam Hussein's nuclear facilities. All of these times, and you're going to have to go after Iran. I think, what do I know? I'm not an expert, but looking at the fact that Iran is getting away with continuing to build and sanctions lifted behind closed doors by the Obama administration back in the spring of 2013, I think it was, or either 2012. I think it was 2013. Behind closed doors, they started lifting sanctions. You're going to have to do something, because once they get a nuke, Saudi Arabia's going to want a nuke. Saudi Arabia's not really your friend. They kind of keep it surface to keep the regime intact. You know, they'll go after Iran and help you do it because they like that theocracy, that power, that money, you know. Anyway, let's talk about Israel's independence and its ability, technology, agriculture, medicine, and now oil and gas. I'd like your take on that.
Well,
I got off on a little...
there's no doubt that Israel is not nearly as powerful as is the U.S. With all the problems of the U.S., it is still the number one country in the world, economically, militarily, scientifically, technologically, etc. Israel is surging, but we're not there yet. And there is no doubt that from that perspective, we do rely in a large manner on cooperation with the U.S. And I emphasize cooperation because the relationship between the U.S. and Israel are a classic two-way street. Mutually beneficial, win-win type of relationships. It's true that Israel receives annually $3.1 billion from the U.S., but it's a misnomer to refer to it as foreign aid, because this is not foreign aid.
Right.
This is America's best investment,
right,
in probably in American history. Because not only are we obligated by the terms of that transfer of money to buy our military systems from the U.S., which is basically a boost, a subsidy to the American defense industries, but we return many, many times more than the $3.1 billion.
I agree.
For instance...
Let me ask you real quick. I want to interrupt you. When you say, for the listeners, because a lot of people don't realize... When you say $3.1 billion, is that in a single fiscal year? Is that over a period of time?
No, every year. Every year.
Okay.
Every year. However, this is a very substantial amount of money. There's no doubt. But
right.
To put it in perspective, and what does it bring back to the American taxpayer, I will share with you the following. Going back to the years... of the Soviet Union and the Cold War. We fought a number of wars with Arab countries equipped with Soviet military systems.
Right.
Following each war, the U.S. sent teams of American military personnel, defense industry personnel, to study those systems. Those teams stayed in Israel for about half a year, studying those military systems, studying the Israeli lessons of facing those systems, of maintaining them, of repairing them, in addition to studying the Israeli battle tactics. And then they went back to the
U.S. Which they still haven't figured out, I mean, how you've won all those wars.
Well, but the fact is that those teams went back to the U.S., sharing with the American defense industry, complement of Israel, the latest from the Soviet defense industry, which enhanced dramatically the performance of the American defense industry, and at the same time, it tilted the military balance, globally speaking, in favor of the U.S., against the USSR, again resulting from Israel's own wars. So we fight those wars with American equipment, but we fight those wars and we share with the Americans the lessons of those wars industrially and operationally. We are talking about battle tactics, which are very relevant to the war in Afghanistan today, because much of that war is counter-terrorism and, to an extent, urban warfare.
Right, which you deal with all the time.
We deal all the time, and today American urban warfare tactics are based entirely on the Israeli experience fighting Palestinian terrorism in Palestinian villages and Palestinian towns, because the terrorists that face America and those that face Israel also are in the habit of using human shield.
Right.
And the question for moral societies like the American Israel society, when you are confronted with terrorists using human shield, how do you minimize the civilian losses while protecting the lives of your own soldiers?
Right.
We have paid with blood to learn those lessons, but those lessons today are shared with the Americans. How much is it worth in American, in terms of American dollars? Nobody can quantify that. I remember going back to 1991, the end of the first Gulf War, which took place in January of 1991. Then Defense Secretary Dick Cheney gave a speech in Washington, and he said during that speech, "Thank you, Israel, for devastating the Iraqi nuclear reactor in 1981, which spared the U.S. a nuclear confrontation in 1991. How many lives have been spared by that Israeli action against Iraq? How many dollars have been spared to the American taxpayer by that Israeli operation? And the same thing, by the way, has to do with the commercial industry.
Let me. I'm gonna stop real quick. And I'm reflecting on what you said about what the what we provided, what Israel provided. I feel like I'm at home every day, sir. What Israel provided during the Cold War, from all of your wars. So would you say, because the left in the United States is desperately trying to rewrite history, and I heard a guy make a comment on MSNBC, because, you know, they're having a lot of problems in Russia and the Ukraine. We are seeing the resurrection of communism under the guise of democracy, which is what we have in the Middle East currently. My point being is, so would you say with all confidence, and I think you can, because if you don't, I will. Would you say that Israel helped the United States win the Cold War?
Well, there's no doubt. And again,
because that's never acknowledged.
Yeah, I'm not going to pretend that we played the cardinal role. Obviously
right.
not.
Right.
But we had a role to play, both intelligence wise, due to our contacts then within the USSR, as well as East Europe communist regimes, as well as, again, studying the lessons of combating Soviet military systems. You take, for example, the Vietnam War. For a long time, too long, Soviet surface-to-air missiles,
right.
Shoulder-launched missiles, used to hunt American helicopters and planes like flies. And the U.S. Air Force did not know how to confront it. It took studying the Israeli lessons of combating those missiles to realize that those missiles were very primitive, and you didn't have to go through sophisticated high-tech ways and means to confront it as the Americans tried and failed. In Israel, we developed what we call the flare system, whereby the pilots of the helicopter or the plane releases...
Chaff.
Right. Releases those flares. The flares attract the missile away from the helicopter.
Really?
And as I was told by a research and development Air Force, American Air Force person, from that day onward, very, very few American aircraft was hit by those missiles in Vietnam, Cambodia, and Laos.
Wow.
Once again, we're talking about a rate of return on investment, the ROI, which is extremely high by that annual investment in Israel, the $3.1 billion.
That's a lot of lives saved.
The best way of quantifying Israeli service or contribution to American national security was articulated by the late General Alexander Haig. He was the Supreme Commander of NATO. He was Secretary of State and one of the most supportive elements of enhanced U.S.-Israel cooperation. When he was asked, how come you're such an enthusiastic supporter of Israel? General Haig's response was, because the Jewish state constitutes the largest American aircraft carrier in the entire world, which doesn't require a single American aircraft or boot on board, which cannot be sunk, which is deployed in a most critical area for America's economic and national security interest. And if there wouldn't have been a Jewish state in the eastern flank of the Mediterranean, then the U.S. would have to dispatch few more real aircraft carriers to the Mediterranean with tens of thousands of American soldiers, which would have cost the American taxpayer something like $15 billion annually, all of which is spared by one Jewish state in the Middle East.
Wow. Wow. Sir, I'm sitting here. I want to say that my mother listens to the show. And
you've done well, Mother.
Thank you. I'm sure she worries about me all the time. Everybody has a misconception about Israel, and it's not always their fault. But with that being said, she listened to my program. She goes, Michael, she was critiquing. She said it in a jestful manner. She said, you don't have to say wow so much. I said, Mother, and I say this to anyone in the audience, especially my sister, who says, Michael, stop saying wow. I'm sitting across from you, sir, and I'm listening to what you say and the contributions of the Jewish people, and I can't find any other word in the English vernacular but wow, because you just showed me, even just that little thing like the flares defending our aircraft, you know. I didn't know that. I did not know that. And I want to say I'm so thankful for Jewish Israeli technology. Wow, that's amazing. So you've given us all this, and now let's move to modern day. Everything you've done, drones, you've enhanced the drone system, which currently there's a bill out in the United States. I don't want to get off on that, but where Obama's done executive order, and drones on American soil can kill any American citizen without due process. It's a very big problem, but with that being said, you guys have really come. You have a drone that rescues wounded soldiers on the field. I read this the other day and posted it on Facebook. It's amazing. So you've made all these advancements that help us out. What are the other advancements that you say that you feel like that separate Israel from the rest of the world that declare, without you saying it, independence?
Well, you take even the drones. And going back to Iraq until recently and Afghanistan today, American soldiers in Afghanistan, as it was in Iraq, benefit from Israeli-developed drones or drones developed jointly by Israel and the U.S. And the Israeli-developed drones are unique as far as their optic capabilities. And therefore, the capabilities of the American elite units to overwhelm the terrorists in Afghanistan in their own trenches has been critically enhanced by using the services of those Israeli technologies installed in the American drones in Afghanistan today. And once again, that is the result of our daily combat against Palestinian terrorism in Israel, and we always share those lessons with our only effective and reliable ally, which is the USA. The same type of contribution also applies to, for instance, water irrigation. Today you have areas in the southwest, in the west, whether it's California, Texas, New Mexico, Arizona, definitely, which suffer from very heavy drought, severe drought, together with the snow and rains in other parts of America. Israel has faced drought, shortage of water from day one, and we have done something about it, which we again share today with the U.S. For instance, in Israel, we recycle 85% of our sewage for agricultural purposes. Now, not only do we recycle it, but we have very, very high standard of sanitation. In fact, we have inspection by Europeans in Israel 24/7 of those water, because we are, in a way, the hothouse of vegetables and fruits for Europe, and they want to make sure that the water which we use are clean water. And we pass those inspections with flying colors, to the extent that today...
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on AmericasWebRadio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on AmericasWebRadio.com anytime you like.
This is Michael Gano with Insight to Israel. Every day, the Israeli Defense Force finds itself on the front line of the war with the militant arm of Islam. Surrounded by enemies from within and without, they fight for the only Jewish state. Military service is mandatory, ladies serving 2 years and men serving 3 right out of high school.
While young people in other democracies are busy traveling or attending university, Israeli men and women gear up for basic training. In a world of heads of state, politicians, ambassadors, diplomats, and a leftist media, many times our voice at the grassroots level is drowned out. So we started an ongoing project called Hershey's for Heroes. Patriot conservatives from all over the U.S. are sending Hershey's chocolate bars with a note of thanks for defending Israel. Won't you join us by sending a sweet message to the IDF? For information, please see my Facebook page at Michael Ganot. Thank you, God bless Patriot conservatives, and God bless Israel in her struggle for sovereignty and security.
You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
Right now we're in the spring. We're in the spring here in Israel, and if it doesn't rain, it usually doesn't rain after Pesach, correct? Pesach, could you share?
Passover, yeah.
Passover, after Passover. And we had a good bit of snow and stuff like that in December and some rain. It rained a little bit last night. We need more rain. Hopefully, we'll have that. But I've been in my travels. I try to show folks the landscape of Israel. It is beautiful right now. It is amazing. So amazingly lush and green all over the country. I know in the north and then...
Here, in the south.
Here in Jerusalem and then the south. Now, eventually, here in a month, it'll burn off because it's going to get hotter.
Right.
But I'm telling you, sir, when I'm on the bus, which I love to ride the bus, it's not always convenient, but that's okay. It's amazing, amazing agriculturally what I see in this country. To say it's not enough just to coin the phrase, making the desert bloom, but people have to see it, what you've done.
Well, people in the U.S. even feel it without knowing. For instance, poultry industry is a big thing in the U.S. An Israeli firm developed a technology which cuts down the cost of poultry feeding by 20%. We formed a joint venture with an American company, and that has saved the American poultry industry every year 20% of the feeding of the poultry. That amounts to something like $200 million saving,
yeah,
every single year.
Wow.
for the poultry industry. And the same thing applies again to commercial industry. Most of the gadgets in your laptop are developed by American companies in their own research and development centers located in Israel, leveraging the brain power of Israel. It goes so far that recently the CEO of Intel told the management in a meeting in Santa Clara, California, that if not for the four research and development centers in Israel, Intel would have been decimated by the international competition. You look at Microsoft. They have two giant research and development centers in Israel. And recently, the new CEO of Microsoft said that by the day Microsoft becomes an Israeli company, due to the growing impact of the research and development centers in Israel upon Microsoft's competitive edge in the global competition.
Now, let me make an observation here. First of all, the reality is you can't do trade with your neighbors, okay? Which causes the price of a lot of things to be higher. And a lot of things you have to, not a lot of things, you create a lot here for yourself. But there are some things you have to import, and a lot of that benefits a lot of American businesses. Peanut butter, let me mention one of them, Skippy peanut butter, you know. I mean, some people don't think of that, but that benefits the producers of Skippy peanut butter. And I say that with regard to the fact that it's expensive here. Especially, it's expensive all over the country. Now, look, I pay $5 for half a gallon of milk. For half a gallon, $5 and some change. That's how much, that's not even the price of a gallon of milk in the United States, okay? Americans need to hear this. And my point is, when you've got great companies like Microsoft, and we can throw out 1,000 companies that are here in the Jewish state, and it's not because this country's cheap.
Right.
I want to emphasize
right.
that.
Right.
It's
right.
not because this country's cheap.
Because of the brain power.
Because of the brain power. I want to emphasize this for Americans listening, okay? You get smart, and business will flock back to your shores.
Right, right.
It's not always about the tax incentive. Now, I know you, I'm sure
it's education, education, and education.
And I say that with regard to the fact that these young people in this country, they're not out doing drugs after high school in a college somewhere.
They go to the military.
They go to the military. They're not out partying. And I want to say this. I don't want to get off here, okay? But I want to emphasize this because I know that we had a discussion off air about American Jews, their children coming here, the first, second, third generation coming here. But I want to emphasize the obligation of the American Jews. This is not Yoram Edinger speaking. This is Michael Gano for Insight to Israel. American Jews, don't you dare. You need to come here and stand with your people after 2,000 years. And if you think this country's so hard, how about you put your money where your mouth is and invest here? Invest your life, your intelligence, your livelihood, and your children to serve honorably next to the Israeli children and the lone soldiers who come here with no obligation and stand with this country to fight.
Well, I think that it's a privilege. It's a privilege.
Privilege
for
right.
for a Jew to be born and live at a time of the reconstruction of the Jewish Commonwealth.
Right.
You think about the probability of a Jew being born at that time, within the context of 2,000 years of exile.
Wow.
What is the chance of being born at that time? And I think the fact that many of us were born at that time behooves us to roll up the sleeves as high as possible and contribute everything, our utmost, to make sure that the reconstruction becomes a fixed reality rather than a transient phenomena in the Middle East.
Wow, that's beautiful. Sir, I'm going to listen to this before I throw it up on the air, and I'm going to go back and I'm going to write down that quote. That was beautifully said. You know firsthand growing up here. I respect you, sir. You were born and raised in this country, and all you've seen is conflict. But yet, look what you've done with your life.
Well, because conflict or threat should always be perceived as a challenge, an opportunity,
right.
rather than an affliction. If you perceive difficulty to be an affliction, then you're a pessimist, you're a fatalist. But if you, as it should be the case, consider difficulty, challenge, threat as an opportunity, as a challenge, then you are a constructive person, then you are an optimist. In Israel, in particular, in the Jewish people at large, have benefited by an optimistic view on life rather right. than a fatalistic. And the more challenges we face in Israel, the more we produce and the more we innovate. If there wouldn't have been challenges, we wouldn't have been that channel of cutting-edge technologies to the American high-tech industry. If we wouldn't be faced by daily terrorism and daily threat by conventional Arab forces, we wouldn't be able to transfer to the American defense industry so many modifications and upgrades as we have done. Your current F-16, which is the number one combat plane in the world, benefits from over 700 Israeli modifications, which are the result of our wartime experience. Now, obviously, we get our F-16 from the Americans,
right,
and we want them to be as sophisticated, as advanced as possible. And therefore, we share it with the Americans, but at the same time, that expands American employment base.
Right.
It upgrades American research and development base. It increases American exports. So it's a win-win type of relationship. And once again, no country but Israel is able to provide the U.S. with such a service. We are here a beachhead for America, both economically as well as value-wise. It is the Judeo-Christian values which are responsible for establishing Israel as well as the U.S.
Right.
And that's the basis for the what I call the covenant between the American people and the Jewish state. Sometimes American presidents lean on Israel brutally.
Right.
But always, in fact, since the early pilgrims in the 17th century, always the American people have supported the idea of the Jewish state before there was a Jewish state and since the establishment of the Jewish state in 1948. One element which should be realized by everyone is that the element most responsible for American support of Israel is the Christian element at large. Jews are very important as far as U.S.-Israel relations, but not as important as have been the Christians.
Right.
In the public at large and on Capitol Hill. For instance, the most critical amendments legislation expanding U.S.-Israel cooperation have always, but always, they've always been initiated and led by Christian legislators, not by Jewish legislators. Jewish legislators helped, assisted, partook, but the initiative has always been that of a Christian legislature, most notably, by the way, the late Senator Daniel Inouye from Hawaii, who was by far, the most pro-U.S.-Israel cooperation on Capitol Hill.
Wow. Let me ask you, that's great stuff. And that's a lot of things. There are a lot of people in denial about that. That, I had someone tell me there's no such thing as Judeo-Christian principles. And I'm like, you can't get away from the fact that the principles that we are progressively, if I could use that term, leaving, abandoning, that lie, which is the separation of church and state, which is not about, you know, the American government and Buddhism, American government and Shintoism, American government and Islam. It's about American government trying to push away from Christianity and using that as a scapegoat, even though it's not really a phrase found in any of our documents. But even our founding fathers acknowledged this. I've read somewhere that they even wanted to try and make Hebrew the...
Right. Well, you can see it until today with the official seal of Yale University.
Right.
The official
seal. It started out as a Christian college.
Right.
University.
Right. And they taught Hebrew for a long time. But until today, the official seal has Hebrew letters there. And the official seal is in Hebrew, Urim Vetumim, which means the power of the high priest during the exodus from Egypt.
Wow.
You look at the official seal of Columbia University, along with Yale, one of the early 10 universities in America, and at the top of the Columbia University official seal, there are the four Hebrew letters of Jehovah. In Hebrew, Jehovah is spelled with four letters.
Wow.
Those four letters are there at the top of the seal. The same thing with Dartmouth College, which again is one of the first 10 universities established in America. At the top of the Dartmouth College seal, there are two Hebrew words written in Hebrew letters, El Shaddai. El Shaddai,
yes,
is a synonym of God.
Wow.
And certainly, if you look at Liberty Bell, Liberty Bell has an inscription. And Liberty Bell's inscription is from the book of Leviticus. And it simply states the most fundamental element of the American culture and American idea: proclaim liberty upon the earth and unto all the inhabitants thereof.
Wow.
If someone looks for Judeo-Christian values, here you have it. Liberty, which is the most fundamental element of the American culture, is relying, or was relied upon by the founding fathers, on the book of Leviticus and the whole idea of Jubilee, which is the symbol, or maybe the climax, of the concept of liberty.
Well, that's a far cry from how Hollywood and the left displays our country as like a conspiracy theory, and I know there were like Freemasons and all that other stuff involved. You know what? I think that's a distraction from the reality that regardless of how the left rewrites our history, our founding fathers, which we don't really talk about, the other signers of the Constitution, we mentioned Franklin and Jefferson,
John Adams.
John Adams. But the rest of them, when you look at their life, many of them were pastors, preachers, missionaries,
right.
Founders of many churches and a lot of those universities you mentioned.
Right.
That started out as Christian universities.
In fact, the document which cemented the American Revolution was Common Sense by Thomas Paine.
Yes.
And Common Sense, roughly 50 pages, relies on the Gideon, the judge, and Samuel, the judge. Gideon, because Gideon told the Israelites who wanted him to become a king that there's only one king.
Right.
And that's God. And no human being should be a king over other human beings. And Samuel, who forewarned the Israelites what kind of a ruler would a king be.
Right.
And he was right.
Saul was...
Right. And other kings as well.
Right.
But again, the fundamentals of the revolt against the British were taken in a way, or were conducted in accordance with the book, namely the Old Testament.
Yeah.
You look at the Ten Commandments. Ten Commandments includes the most fundamental elements in our life, whether it is respect thy father and mother, and care about the other person, obviously worship God, and that is a fundamental element. You can see it, by the way, on the ground of the state capital in both Austin, Texas, and Oklahoma City in Oklahoma. You have the monument of the tablets with the ten commandments.
Let me say this. I'm not trying to interrupt you, but you said Texas and Oklahoma. Now, if I didn't hear your accent, I'd say you look like a Texan.
Well, I did my undergraduate in Texas. I served as Israeli consul general in Houston, Texas, and I visit Texas two, three, and sometimes four times a year. And in many respects, Israel is the Texas of the Middle East, because Texas is a unique state due to the defiance of the jagged cutting edge of nature. The weather in Texas, the nature of Texas constitute quite a challenge. We have other and even more acute challenges in the Middle East. Certainly Texas is one of the more patriotic states in the Union. Israel is very patriotic, and certainly the willingness to serve in the military and the realization that you cannot retain liberty unless you're willing to fight for liberty. This is something which is very deep in the history of Texas as well as in Israel. Texas, as you and the listeners know, is the only state in the Union which was independent before joining the Union.
Yeah. You know, we kind of bounced around a little bit, but you're giving us some good stuff, sir. I can't even tell you, anyone that's listening, to hear an Israeli talk about American history that a lot of Americans have forgotten, and a lot of history that's not taught in our schools today. It is not taught in our schools. And I think, I sit in shame, because there are things you talked about when concerning the Liberty Bell, and these are minute things that a lot of us don't either realize or have forgotten.
Well, you know, but talking about forgetting or remembering, some of the founding fathers, like John Adams, Thomas Jefferson, and Benjamin Franklin, they had a different version of official seal for America, and they wanted to have the parting of the sea and
awesome.
Drowning chariots of Pharaoh and the pillar of fire becoming the official seal of America. And around that seal, they suggested an inscription. And the inscription they suggested was rebellion to tyranny, against tyranny, is obedience
to God.
And then they also talked about the forgetfulness is oblivion and memory is deliverance. And
wow.
I believe this is something which has retained the existence of the Jewish people.
Absolutely.
Memory. And this is something which so far has made the U.S. an exceptional nation. Hopefully the U.S. will continue adhering to Judeo-Christian values, to memory rather than forgetfulness, because the world, for the sake of its own sanity, needs a strong U.S.
Yeah.
We cannot afford, the world cannot afford the U.S. to be relegated to a role of a policeman. We need the U.S. to be a strong marshal, not just a sheriff,
right.
But a real
right.
marshal.
Wow.
With a weak U.S., the different thugs and goons in the Middle East, in the American continent, in Africa and Asia, are much
and
more
Europe.
Emboldened. In Europe are emboldened. A strong marshal like U.S. is subduing the radicalism of those potential thugs in the world.
Yeah, look, you know, again, I don't want to veer off. We kind of have, and it's okay, because sometimes things take their course. I didn't have a problem. I'm going to tell you, I had no problem with paying Mubarak, who was the president, quote-unquote, of Egypt. He was a friend to Israel, and he kept the militant arm of Islam quelled. And was a friend to the United States. I know we were paying off his friendship, but you know what? Whatever it takes to keep civility. Because when you let the savages loose, they'll do whatever it takes. They'll slaughter their own children to get to your throat. Now, that's a fact. They say it all the time in the media, all the time.
And unfortunately, it was an American president, Obama, who let down Mubarak, who came to Cairo and provided a tailwind to the enemies of Mubarak, the Muslim Brotherhood,
right.
which is basically a transnational Muslim terrorist group, anti-American, anti-Western. And it was Obama who insisted that the leaders of the Muslim Brotherhood would attend his presentation, and therefore Mubarak stayed away, did not attend the speech by President Obama in 2009 in Egypt. But that action by an American president served as a message to the Egyptian people that supposedly the U.S. has given up on Mubarak, and therefore the Muslim Brotherhood should have the control over Egypt. Sadly enough, it was a repeat of what another American president, Jimmy Carter, did to the Shah of Iran, when the Shah of Iran was the number one ally of America in the Persian Gulf and beyond. And it was Jimmy Carter who came to Tehran, basically treating the Shah with a very, very patronizing manner, delivering a message to the Iranian people that the Shah is no longer beneficiary of American support, and that provided a tailwind to the Khomeini revolution, which transformed Iran from a number one ally of America to the number one enemy of America.
Yeah. That's an amazing point, because we have another election coming up, and I'm going to tell you, I don't care what anybody says, Hillary Clinton's going to get in. I'm predicting it. I'm predicting it because we don't have the will and the fortitude and the morality. I'm saying this as an American. We don't have the moral courage to keep a woman like that out, who is receiving a lot of money from a lot of Muslim countries, especially the Saudis, and she is not a friend, regardless of what people here may think because of their limited view in many aspects. You're too busy working. You don't have time to pay attention to American politics.
Yeah, but you have before that, you have very crucial election in November 2014.
Ken, I agree.
Midterm election, which basically will determine whether Obama will be lame duck president for the following 2 years, or a racing horse like president, and that would be determined by the American voters whether the majority in the Senate will or won't be transferred to the Republicans, and whether the majority in the House will or won't be retained by the Republicans.
So let me ask you this. What do you see, and again, this is about Israel's future and independence, because you're not going to get, I don't think you're going to get any help from our military when it comes to Iran. What do you see as far as that goes?
Well, certainly.
Realistically and honestly. And I know you'll be honest. Yeah. I'm just.
The U.S. cannot afford. The U.S. cannot afford a nuclear Iran. It's sad to see the current administration appeasing Iran rather than confronting Iran. But the reality is that nuclear Iran would devastate American economic and national security interest. It would cause the collapse of the Arab oil-producing regimes in the Gulf. It would embolden Islamic terrorists who are already in the U.S. mainland, hundreds of sleeper cells throughout the U.S. It's going to radicalize further Venezuela, which is already a very, very painful reality for American interest in your own backyard. And certainly a nuclear Iran would transform Iran from a controllable tactical threat to a non-controllable, strategic, nuclear, fanatic, apocalyptic threat.
Yeah.
When it comes to Israel, we cannot afford it either. And therefore, if the U.S. Will be as reckless as not to decimate the nuclear infrastructure of Iran, it will be up to Israel. I firmly believe we have the capabilities.
Absolutely.
We have the will to do it. It's not going to be as easy, very easy, for America right now. It's going to be much more complicated, but Israel will have to do it, by the way. And it's easy for America because America is already right now in the Persian Gulf. America is already has its own bases in Saudi Arabia. For the U.S. today to devastate the infrastructure of Iran's nuclear effort would take a sizable military exercise, no war. You don't need boots on the ground.
Right.
You need to operate the Navy and the Air Force to devastate that infrastructure.
Wow. Yoram, it's a pleasure, sir. Thank you very much for your input. That's some great stuff. Great
Thank
show.
You very much.
Great show. Thank you to all the folks that listen to Insight to Israel. We're going to have you back. I love it. We really get in some good stuff. And I love that, and I'm sure the listeners do also. That's why my ratings are doing so good.
Thank you very much.
God bless the Patriot Conservatives that stand for truth and righteousness, the Christians.